All right, good morning. I want to welcome you to Mount Olive Church today as we continue in our series, Parent World, a series where we're diving in to look at how we would parent if we parented in a way that matched the character of God and the way that He's called us to live as parents. Not a parent, not a problem. Much of this series actually just looks at the character of God in one hand. And so it's relevant and applicable to all of our lives as we learn the truth of how our God and Father relates to us. And so there's relevance even if you're not a parent. And secondly, much of this series relates to what it looks like to be a disciple maker. A disciple is someone who follows Jesus, as we say at Mount Olive, to see people become devoted followers of Jesus. And if you are a follower of Jesus, it is inseparable to also be someone who then builds into others to see them become followers of Jesus. That is part of what being a follower of Jesus is. And so much of the things we will talk about is parenting, because parenting really is just discipleship on steroids. And so much of what we'll see in the parenting series relates to discipleship, though not all of it directly, some of it more than others. Now, I imagine at some point, whether you're a parent or not a parent, that you have heard some alarmist messaging that tends to come out from time to time, often from politicians, often from pastors and religious leaders. And the messaging as it relates to the state of our world and parenting and kids kind of goes this way. Parents, society, we have lost our kids because of the vaping and drug movement within our culture. We're losing our children, our teens, because of the postmodernism and the erosion of truth. We've lost our kids because of the mental health crisis. We are losing our children because of the technology age and social media. We are losing our kids. And so parents, the situation is hopeless. I mean, we just don't have any ability with all these things coming at our kids to have any chance with our kids. And alarmist messages often go, they're easy to share, they sell easily, but are they always true? Well, regarding this, I love what Vern Benson said in his book, Families and Faith. He and his colleagues did a 35-year study, think of that, 35 years, with 3,500 people over four generations, and here's what he writes. The degree of intergenerational similarity in four dimensions of religious practice and beliefs had not changed between 1970 and 2005. Unchanged. He goes on and says, the extent to which religious families are successful in passing on their faith to younger generations appears to have remained stable over time. It has not changed. In short, our results indicate that the decline of parental influence assumed by many has not occurred in religious beliefs and practices. And he talks about the importance of parents and, get this, grandparents in this intergenerational passing on of the faith. So what I want to tell you parents and grandparents today is you have not and we have not lost our kids. The situation is not hopeless. You have a great deal of influence still. As we saw last week from the book, Handing Down the Faith, all research in the United States today shows clearly that parents are by far the most important factor influencing their children's religion, not only as youth, but also after they leave home. If you have adult children, you still have influence. And they go on to say, not clergy, religious schools, youth ministers, neighborhoods, Sunday school, mission trips, service projects, summer camps, peers, or the media. Parents, that is who matters here and now, and that's why we're doing this series as well. So parents, you have a great deal of influence. Does that mean these things don't matter? Of course they do. And we all have stories of how our school and our summer camp experience and the media had influence in our lives, but parents, you have so, so much influence. So armed with all this influence, parents, how do we use the influence we have been given? Well, in this series, we've been doing some Mythbusters. Today, we're actually going to have two Mythbusters. The first one won't feel like much of a Mythbuster. In fact, when you hear this, parents, you're going to be like, duh, I already knew that. I never believed that myth, okay? So the first Mythbuster is this. Your kids are not inherently or intrinsically good. Now, some of you are like, I never fell for that myth that my kids were inherently or intrinsically good because of experience, right? Because as a parent, you're like, I never taught them to have tantrums. I never taught them to steal or lie or cheat or hit their sister. And they have tantrums and they lie and cheat and steal and they hit their sister. What happened, right? Well, we already know by experience that our kids are not intrinsically or inherently good, but we also know this from theology. The psalmist David wrote this regarding himself, which is, I think, true of all people. He said, "Surely I was sinful at birth, and more than that, sinful from the time my mother conceived me." That's an unbelievable thought. David says that he wasn't only sinful from when he entered the world outside of his mother's womb, but from the very moment of conception, there was something bound in him that would drive him towards disobedience, drive him towards sin and folly and foolishness. It was there from the beginning. But along the way, even though we know this experientially and we know this theologically, we have a tendency to wrestle with, well, what do we do with the sin or the folly or the foolishness bound up in my children? I said last week that as parents, we are to carry two things. One is we're to carry a fan, and we talked about an entire Sunday. What does it look like to fan into flame the good character and the godliness and the faith that is maybe already seated in our children? What does it look like to carry a fan? But I also said we need to carry an extinguisher. And today we're going to talk about the extinguisher. Now, how would God carry an extinguisher if we're going to look at God's character? Now, to set this all up, we have to understand one extremely important truth about God's character. John, the apostle, who is one of Jesus' closest friends, writes this in John 4, verse 16. He says, "God is love." The very essence of who God is love. And what he does is loving. So however God would carry an extinguisher, we can know that whatever he does in carrying the extinguisher as it relates to our sin, as it relates to our folly and foolishness, we can know that it is love and it comes from a being who is love and that it will be loving. Well, as we look at scripture, and we're going to talk about this today, The word that God uses, the concept that God uses as it relates to carrying an extinguisher is this. It's the word and concept of discipline. Now, I know when it comes to parenting circles, this is dangerous talk today. Because there are all kinds of ideas tied to abuses and hurt that we have experienced related to this word. And so hopefully my desire is to clear some of that up. But also, as it relates to discipline and carrying this, we have a temptation sometimes as parents to say, well, maybe I just need to do some positive parenting and never do anything negative. And I grew up in a generation of parenting where like the strap and the belt was still in school when I was a kid. We don't do that anymore. Now we, you know, have timeouts and conversations, and sometimes it's not even timeouts and conversations. It's like, why don't we just fan into flame the good things? Surely there's good there. And there may be, but we also know that there's sin. So what do we do with that? Here's mythbuster number two, and this one might be a little more controversial. Allowing my child to experience pain or even experience pain at my own doing as a parent would be unloving. That if I allow my child where I could protect them or save them from pain, or even allow them to experience pain from my own hand as a parent, that would actually be unloving. And what we're going to see today is that the opposite is true. To not allow our children to experience pain and to protect them from every difficulty and consequence and challenge is actually unloving. Even pain from our own hand, as hard as that is to hear. So, I know that was a lot. Maybe you're like, I disagree. Let's dive in. I'll give you the point of the whole message, and then we're going to dive in. So I'm going to give it away. You can sleep for the rest if you're just like really struggling because you were seeding this week. The point of the message is this. Godly discipline, as we're going to see, godly discipline is for the good, not of the one disciplining, but for the one being disciplined. If you have your Bibles, go to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. To set up the context, the writer of Hebrews in chapter 11 is given a bunch of names and people from times past who stood true to their faith in God. It's kind of called the chapter of the Hall of Faith chapter, right? In chapter 12, after saying these stood firm, they didn't even receive everything promised. They went through great persecution, hardship, and trial. The writer says, so now with this great cloud of witnesses who went through this difficulty and trial and pain, run the race with your eyes focused on Jesus. Don't get distracted by sin and don't get distracted by the difficulties of this life. And undoubtedly, the people were facing all kinds of trials. As I assume, in your life, you face some trials from time to time. And in this context, the writer says this, in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. Meaning, in times past, people who walked in faith sometimes had to die for their faith. In their resistance of sin and the pathway of sin and following God, they had to die. You haven't had to do that yet. And if you're here today, I guess we're in that same crowd, because if we had died already, we wouldn't be here, okay? So we're in the same crowd. And then the writer says this, now, and you have completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son. So in the pain and in the struggle you're facing, the writer of Hebrews says, let me give you a word of encouragement so that you don't give up in the middle of the pain. Encouragement like a father addressing a son, like your heavenly father speaking to you, a son and daughter of the king. And here's the word of encouragement. He plagiarizes. He just quotes Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11 and 12. And here's what it says. It says, here's the word of encouragement. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you. When God comes and he disciplines you, don't make light of it. Don't just push it off. And I think sometimes when hard things come my way, sometimes I want to push them off. I'm like, God, why are you bringing this to me? God, I don't deserve this. God, take it away. And the writer says, no, when hard things come, don't just fluff it off. Don't push it away or even wish it away. Don't make light of the Lord's discipline and do not lose heart. Don't give up when he rebukes you. Why? Because the Lord disciplines the one he not hates. The Lord disciplines the ones he loves, and he chastens everyone he accepts as a son. What we see immediately is that discipline and love are interconnected, that love includes discipline, does not push discipline away. More so, it goes on even further, endure hardship as discipline. Why? God is treating you as his children. So when hard things come, I'm like, God, take it away. I don't deserve this. And he's like, no. Don't make light of it. Don't wish it away so quickly. The Lord disciplines. When you're disciplined, you know, man, you really love me. Sometimes I think, God, don't love me quite so much. Not only does he love you, this shows you are an actual child of God. Here's what we see. Love, discipline, and legitimate childness, sonship, daughtership, are interconnected. He goes on. So endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? And we can include mother in this, right? What child is not disciplined by their parent? No. If you are not disciplined and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate. They're not your child. Not true sons and daughters at all. See how love, discipline, and legitimate sonship are all tied, interconnected in this passage. Moreover, the writer says, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us and we have respected them for it. And some of you say, no, I don't respect my dad. I hate him for what he did in his discipline. I think what the writer's saying is, moreover, we had human fathers who disciplined us when they disciplined us with godly discipline. And my guess is 95% or more of us, if we had fathers who disciplined us out of love, not anger, but disciplined us out of love and warmth, emotional warmth, but disciplined us still, we respect them for it today. And this is so true. It goes on, how much more should we, if we respected our earthly parents when they disciplined us out of love, how much more should we submit to the Father of spirits, our heavenly Father, and live? Here's another thing the author does. He ties together discipline and life. Because if we go back to where we started, that we are not inherently good, that in us there is sin and folly and disobedience and foolishness, which is a path that leads to destruction, then discipline would change the direction of our path to the way of life. In fact, he's quoting Proverbs again in Proverbs 10, 17. Whoever heeds discipline shows the way to life. Whoever was on the pathway because of our own intrinsic sinful nature, on the pathway of foolishness and destruction, but heeds discipline and goes in the pathway, they show the path to life. He goes on and says, back to Hebrews, they, that's our parents, our fathers, they disciplined us for a while, a little while, as they thought was best. That's all we can do as human parents, right? But God, your Father in heaven, disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share in his holiness. Two important factors about godly discipline shown in this. When God disciplines us, he doesn't discipline us because he's got to get something off his chest. It's not like, oh, you do what you deserve, you're going to get what's coming to you. He doesn't discipline us that way. It's not like God's like, oh, I'm so tired of these people, I'm going to give them what they... No, no, no. God doesn't discipline us so that he can get off something off his chest or out of his anger, uncontrolled anger. God disciplines us not for his good, but for our good. Something about godly discipline and for the purpose of change, that we may share in his holiness, that we may be formed into his image. And then he says regarding discipline, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Here's what we learn about discipline as the writer is talking about. Discipline is not a conversation with your kid about how awesome they are and they can just live into it. That feels nice. Discipline is painful, not pleasant. Later on, however, and he goes back to what it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Here's four things I think this passage kind of enlightens us and points us to as it relates to godly discipline that I kind of want to work out over the next few minutes. Godly discipline is an outworking of love, not hate. Godly discipline is an outworking of love. Secondly, godly discipline shows legitimacy. It shows that we are true children. Thirdly, godly discipline is painful. And that's where much of the controversy revolves around as it relates to discipline. And fourthly, godly discipline produces character, holiness, and respect to the one who has disciplined us if it's done in a godly way. Now I want to tackle these kind of in tandem today. We're going to look at the first two and then the last two and kind of work this out a little bit more. So godly discipline is an outworking of love and it shows legitimacy. A number of years ago, many, many years ago, my wife and I knew a teenager who was a bit of a rebellious rebellious teenager. This teenager had two parents. One was not present physically, split home, far away. The other parent was physically present, but not present. And this teenager, to this day, would say, looking back, I was a foolish, rebellious, kind of just do it on my own teenager. But as a 14 or 15-year-old, this teen was talking to my wife one day and revealed something I think that is intuitive to all of us. And it's that discipline is an outworking of love and it shows legitimacy. This teen told my wife, Mandy, sometimes I just do rebellious, stupid things. This is a 14-year-old, 15-year-old talking. Sometimes I just do rebellious things to see if the parent who lives in this community where she was living at the time, if they're going to do anything. Does my parent even care? Did they even notice? Because here's what we know. Godly good discipline takes time and care, and it's difficult. It shows love. It's not easy to do good discipline. And it shows legitimacy. I'll tell you one thing about me. I do discipline my children. I do not go to Cross Iron Mall and discipline all the children in the mall that are misbehaving, that I think they need some discipline. You know why? Because they're not my children, right? But when I discipline my children, what am I saying? You're mine. You live in my house. You're part of my community. And I love you. Discipline, godly discipline, shows love, and it is an outworking of legitimacy. They indeed are our child. So I want to look at discipline from two angles now. Discipline on the front end and discipline on the back end. I'm not talking spankings, okay? Discipline on the front end before any disobedience has happened, because I think this is an important piece for us as parents. And discipline on the back end, which is on the other side, when a boundary's been crossed. So we're going to talk about proactive and reactive discipline. I think an outworking of love shows legitimacy is an act of proactive discipline. Proactive discipline, I'll define it, I just made this up, so this is my view. Proactive discipline will create, this is what it does, it creates clear and consistent boundaries for our legitimate children because of our love for them. Proactive discipline creates, and this is so important, creates clear and consistent boundaries. And when we do this for our children, it actually creates a stable, loving environment for them to grow up in. Because if we have not created clear or consistent boundaries, one day you're in a good mood and they get away with everything. And the next day you come home, not in a good mood, and you just come at them for everything. And your child is like, which mom am I gonna get today? Which dad am I gonna get today? And it creates instability in their life. But when there is clear and consistent boundaries, your child knows I belong and this is the environment I live in. And it creates a sense of safety and stability and love for your children. But here's the challenge. Creating clear and keeping consistent boundaries is really easy sitting in church listening to a 30-minute message. And then all of a sudden you work two jobs. And you have three other kids, and they've all been at your ankles all day. And you're a single parent trying to parent your three or four children by yourself. And life gets busy. And emotions start to run a little bit thin. And suddenly we're not so clear and we're not so consistent. It's why I think the writer of Proverbs says this, whoever spares the rod hates their children. Remember, discipline is loving, not disciplining is hateful. But the one who loves their children is what? Careful. Means it takes care, it takes time, it takes energy. And sometimes it's flat out, I'll tell you, I told you this already. I am not the best parent in the world. I'm not the expert in this. I'm in the trenches with you. Sometimes disciplining is the last thing I want to do. Just let me be on my phone right now, right? I just want some me time. It's exhausting. But be careful. Loving discipline is be careful, take care and time to have consistent and clear boundaries. Here's the other challenge about having clear and consistent boundaries. Your children will push against your clear and consistent boundaries. They will. If you say curfew's 10, they're gonna push 10, 15. They will. If you say 20 minutes on your phone, they'll take 30. They will. If you say one cookie, they'll take two. They will. Why? Because they're inherently good. Not. You know why? Because they wanna see, does mom and dad care? Is this really the boundary? Or can I push it a little further? Are you going to stand or are you just going to be a flop? Every child, you were a child once. You did this. We all push boundaries. So what are some boundaries? And you know, for a 2-year-old, they're going to be different than maybe an 8-year-old and an 18-year-old. When they're 11 and you're like, hey, this is your screen time, 14, 18, you're gonna have to reconsider what are the boundaries, because as they grow older, you give more freedom, but with more freedom comes more responsibility, and you're gonna have to wrestle through that as a parent. But having clear and consistent boundaries is loving. It is an outworking of love, and it shows you belong to this family. Here's one I hear from my kids all the time. Yeah, but my friends, they get to. I'm like, that's great. They don't live in this family. And I love you, and you're my legitimate child. So these are our boundaries. And they're like, can I live with my friend's family? I'm like, I don't know. We'll have to talk to them. Let's see. Maybe you like their boundaries more. Clear, consistent, and outworking of love, it shows legitimacy. And then the last two. Godly discipline is painful. It produces character, holiness, and respect. Godly discipline is painful, and this is where discipline can become so controversial. Because for many of us, we have experienced ungodly discipline. Discipline done out of anger. Discipline that became abusive. And so we swing the pendulum the other way. And we had a tool of discipline that was used on us that will never use that tool. But my question is, the tool the problem or the person using the tool? And we push away from disciplining our children, but I think we push away from something that could help them. We live in a society that's really anti-pain. We avoid pain at all costs. Well, let me tell you something about pain. Though often avoided, isn't it true that pain is our greatest teacher? I bet some of the most important lessons you learned in life are not from your successes, it's from the pain of your failures. That there was something that happened and you've never forgot that. And it formed you and it changed you. Though often avoided, pain is a great, great teacher. It's why the writer of Proverbs in his wisdom said this: folly is bound up in the heart of a child, meaning your kids aren't intrinsically good, right? Neither your grandkids, grandparents. I know you think they are, but folly is bound up in the heart of our children. But the rod of discipline, godly discipline, will drive it far away. Pain is a great teacher to redirect as we discipline, to redirect our children in pathways that are going to lead to life rather than death. I don't know who said it first, but there's a statement I think is just gold as it relates to pain. And it's this: we often don't change until the pain of not changing becomes greater than the pain of changing. We often don't change until the pain of not changing becomes great enough that it's greater than the pain of not changing. Think of it this way. If you have a boundary about how your child needs to speak to their mother in respect, but they're speaking disrespectfully, but there's no pain, why would they ever change? If there's no pain that I ever experience in using my money poorly, because my parents, even as a 24-year-old, they just come and bail me out from every consequence, will I ever change in my poor money management? Until the pain of not changing becomes greater, why would I change? And this is where pain can be so, so gold. Appropriate levels of pain to redirect. I love what Mark Townsend and Henry Cloud write in their book, Boundaries. To rescue people from the natural consequences of their behavior is to render them powerless. Because the very thing that could lead them to change and grow in character, you've taken away from them. How would they ever change? The writer of Proverbs says this exactly the same way. A hot-tempered person must pay the penalty, rescue them, and you will do it again and again and again and again. And you'll keep rescuing them because they will never change. See, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. What is a rod of discipline? The rod actually literally is just stick. The stick of discipline. Now, I don't know if the writer meant like an actual stick, but my guess is that he's referring to a tool of discipline. That there is a tool we use And you, as a parent, have to discern what tool is most appropriate at what time. And I told you earlier, the tool in our society has changed. When I was a kid, we had straps, we had timeouts. Now we have conversations. Sometimes we still have timeouts. Sometimes we have, you know, we're going to take this away. But I think regardless of the tool, and we can get all hung up on which tool to use, but my guess is the tool isn't the most important piece. It's how you handle the tool you're going to use. See, because if it's physical, we know that there's physical abuse. You can go overboard. If it's a timeout, we know there's neglect. That's abuse as well. If it's, it can be emotional abuse. It could be verbal abuse. We can go too far with any tool we use. So we can't get hung up, I think, on the tool. The question is, how do we use the tool, whatever that rod of discipline is, and it's going to look different based on age. How do we use the tool of discipline to drive away the folly, the foolishness that's bound up in the heart of a child? So let me give to you what I think Hebrews chapter 12 already gave us the answer in how we use the tool, whatever tool you are comfortable using as a parent. Here's how the writer of Hebrews says it. Here's how we're to use the tool. God disciplines us for our good in order that we may share in his holiness. Here's what godly discipline looks like. Whatever tool you use, the tool is used. Godly discipline is used for our good, meaning this. Godly discipline is for the good of the one being disciplined. I liked how TJ, one of our counselors at MTO Reach, said it. He said, discipline, although hurtful, should not be harmful. Let me add, rather, it should be helpful. Discipline, godly discipline, although hurtful, ought not to be harmful, but it should be helpful. It is about them. It is about them growing. It's not pain for the sake of pain. It's pain for the sake of change. It's a very different reason for pain. Godly discipline is for the good of the one being disciplined. Meaning, if you as a parent are in an emotional state where it feels good because your child had it coming to them, you may not be in the right emotional state to discipline them. You may need a timeout so that you can discipline them in a godly way. And this is so hard. When I'm at my worst, I discipline out of anger and they had it coming for them. And then usually I have to go back and apologize for the way I disciplined them, even though they were wrong, and it's so annoying. It's so annoying. When I'm at my best, usually I have a conversation with them, and by the time I'm disciplining them, I don't even want to anymore. But it's not pain for the sake of pain. It's pain for the sake of change. It's because I love you and I want you to grow and change. There may be some language we have to change as parents. When we say, kid, you're going to pay for that, does that mean they're going to get it as payment or for the sake of change? I think we've got to do some theological work here. Jesus has already paid for our sin. All of our folly, all of our foolishness, all of our sin has been paid for. We do not pay for our sin anymore, but God still disciplines us. Not to make us pay, but so that we will be changed into the holiness and the character of God himself. That's why he disciplines us, Hebrews chapter 12. We still experience pain, but it's not for the sake of pain. It's for the sake of change, so that we will be grown into new people, walking in the pathway of life rather than the pathway of destruction. Godly discipline is for the good of the one being disciplined. Secondly, we see that godly discipline is not payment, it's correctional. And I mentioned this already. It leads us to the change, being formed into the image of God. You know, if we as parents say, you're going to pay for this, guess what that encourages our kids? Next time, just not to get caught. They'll be better. Not character-wise, they'll be better at hiding it. But if we walk alongside them and show them, hey, I want you to grow into this new person that's going to be so much better. It's for your good. It's not payment. It's simply saying, would you grow into this? And the pain is just a reminder, because pain's a great teacher. Just a reminder, I don't want to go down that pathway again. Discipline ought to be painful for the one disciplining and the one being disciplined. I think as parents, as we discipline our kids, if it doesn't tug on our heartstrings to see them go through pain, whatever that is, a timeout, you don't get to play that, whatever it may be, if it doesn't pain us, then maybe we got to check our hearts again. Word says, the prophet Ezekiel said, God, your Father in heaven, takes no joy, no pleasure in the death of the wicked. They had it coming for them. They deserved it. He does not take pleasure. It pains him to see us experience pain. And as we parent, may we parent with the godly discipline, an outworking of our love for our kids. It shows legitimacy. It could and will be painful, but it produces, it has purpose to produce character, holiness, and respect. Godly discipline is for the good of the one being disciplined. I don't know what you're going through right now. Maybe for you, you're like, I'm not a parent, but maybe you're going through some hard things. The writer of Hebrews says, here's a word of encouragement. Don't make light the Lord's discipline. Endure hardship as discipline. You're a child, don't give up. See what God may want to teach you to form you into his image as you follow him. And if you are a parent, especially of younger kids, what would it look like to be proactive and set up discipline on the proactive side, on the front end of things? Have clear, consistent boundaries. And then on the backside of things, reactively, to hold those boundaries, administering appropriate discipline that's for their good, not yours, and seeing them changed and formed into godly character. Let me pray with you. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you that a difficult subject like discipline and pain can be, I think, redeemed from the abusive misuse of discipline and pain that many of us maybe have experienced, to see that in your way, it is love and it is loving. So help us, Father, as imperfect parents, help me, help us to catch ourselves, to put ourselves in time out when we're not in a right place to be disciplining our kids. And give us discernment at the different ages, what it looks like to set boundaries and then keep boundaries. We need your wisdom in this, Father, so, so much. And we ask this in your name, Jesus. Amen. Thanks so much for joining us today. We trust you have been encouraged and challenged in your faith journey. If you're desiring prayer, want more information on our church, want to partner with us, or be involved in any way, please go to our website at mountoliveefc.com. We'll see you next time.